quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, for the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and Stolo First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and oh boy, is it just me, or is it time for a nap? Is it time to go to sleep? It is not even that late. It is Sunday afternoon during the time of recording, and I think I've been like sleeping pretty well lately, but I think it is the sudden change in weather that has been impacting me both emotionally and also like physically. I'm just like constantly tired, constantly like lethargic, very extremely sleepy. I'm a sleepy baby the past couple of days, and I kind of hate that, right? Because when you're tired, you become irritable and you're not even fully 100% on. And so you can be doing something, not fully engaged, you mess up, you're already kind of annoyed because you're tired, and now you lose your temper. That's kind of how I've been navigating the past couple of days, with this like sudden rainy spring weather. The other thing about it is that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a morning person, but compared to, I think, a lot of other people, I am pretty functional during the morning. I get up, I'm like alert, pretty alert, and I'm excited to get on with my day. Not in a positive way, but I know that I have to get on with my day, and so the gears just function, right? It is almost like in Castle in the Sky, when they find that like old dysfunctional robot and it awakens. It's kind of like that. That's kind of me. The mornings are the best time to like listen to bird song, for example, go out, look at some birds, and to like, if you got a busy packed day, you gotta wake up early so that you can finish things on time, so that you can take some of your evening off, right? So I don't hate the mornings, but I was thinking maybe that is the reason why that the past couple of days I have been so tired. What if there is some force in the universe that is making me repent, because the natural alignment of the cosmos dictates that actually the morning times are for tired times, right? And if you're not tired during first thing in the morning, then it's gonna come back at you later on in the morning, into the early afternoon, into the mid-afternoon, into the late afternoon, until you can't stand it anymore and you pass out right after dinner and you end up having sleep paralysis because you're so tired. Is that just a me thing? Who knows? Hey, anyways, today I've got an exciting show for you. I got to sit down and talk with Jordana George, who is the curator of an exhibition currently happening over at Bill Reed Gallery. The exhibition is called Khayyam, and it is about comics. If you've listened to the show over the course of the many years it has gone on, you know that I love a good comic. I love a good conversation about comics, and Jordana and I talk all about that, and about what you can look forward to at the exhibition. And of course, they give some really cool recommendations, which is super exciting. So get into it. That's coming up real soon. On the playlist today, it's a short one. We are listening to some newly released CanCon that's mostly upbeat. We've got some Ginger Beef coming up in the hour. We'll be listening to some VanCon with Ecstasy. And first, here is Vancouver queer icon, the golden age of wrestling, with Ferrari Rocher. Enjoy! Thank you.
is Bird Note. Birds like finches and cardinals love sunflower seeds, which they take into their stout triangular beaks one after the other. In the blink of an eye, they extract the nutritious contents, and they do it so fast it looks like a magician's sleight of hand. But if we magnify the process and slow it down, we can see how it works. First, if we look inside a finch's beak, we see a groove that runs the length of the beak on the cutting edge of the upper half. The lower half of the beak slides into it perfectly. When a finch plucks a sunflower seed from the feeder, it uses its tongue to maneuver the seed lengthwise into that groove. As it closes its beak, a slight back-and-forth action slices open the hull, and a small sideways movement husks the seed, while the tongue may help extract the kernel. Now it's quickly onto the next seed. Maneuver, slice, husk and extract, swallow. Chickadees lack the heavy-duty seed-slicing beak of a finch, but they still partake of countless sunflower seeds. A chickadee takes one sunflower seed at a time from the feeder, flies to a nearby perch where it can hold the seed atop a branch, then hammers and chips the hull open with the tip of the bill to extract the goods. In that amount of time, a hungry finch might easily open and consume half a dozen seeds. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. I'm sitting down with Jordana George, who is the guest curator of the current running exhibition at Bill Reed Art Gallery called Chayam. And it is such a pleasure to be able to talk today. Thank you so much for your time today, Jordana. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listener?
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Jordana George. I use they, them pronouns. I am from the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation, from Sooke, BC, on Vancouver Island. And I am living in Coquitlam on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam Nations. I've been here as a guest since 2021. And yeah, I curated the current exhibition Chayam at Bill Reed Gallery, and it's my first time curating, and yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
That's awesome. What is Chayam about?
Yeah, so Chayam is a Sunchothan word, which is my dialect from the island. It means to tell stories, and I'm a comic artist by trade, and I've always had an interest in comics, and so the show is about Indigenous comics and Indigenous storytelling through comics as a medium. So I'm one of the artists featured in the show, along with four other comic artists from the West Coast. They all have different backgrounds, both from where on the coast they're from and also their experience and way that they utilize comics and how they interpret the word comics. So the other artists are Gord Hill, who is Kwikwakiwak, Michael Nikoyagalanis, who is Haida, Wes Harmon, who is Kiriyar Witat, and Cole Pauls, who is Taltan. So they all have worked in comics in different, I guess, capacities before, and I've been a fan of all of their work for years, so I was really excited to bring them all together for this exhibition.
It must have been so exciting to be able to put together that with so many people who have influenced your work and who are, I mean, in my opinion, like making really cool strides in the world of comics in general as well. We'll talk a little bit about, I guess, like what their work looks like at the gallery in a little bit. But firstly, one of the things I was really interested in was that this exhibition is about comics by Indigenous artists. Of course, the core tenet of Bill Reed Art Gallery is to celebrate the artwork of Northwest Coast Indigenous artists, both in traditional art forms and modern ones. So already there you have a foundation that encourages art appreciators of all kinds to get into and appreciate comics by Indigenous storytellers. But in the larger art world, I find the comics, for the most part, and I would even make the suggestion that other visual art, such as illustration and design, they are not often considered like gallery worthy, in the sense that they don't fall under the meta category of fine art, and they're often still considered amateur or childish and overall in other elitist terms. Then of course there's the obvious colonialism and racism of museums and galleries in general, right? Like, traditional art forms are not taken seriously despite the years of skill that it takes for artists to develop, and they're only really appreciated if they're like consumable, like touristy things, or if they can be frankly stolen and studied by white historians in museums of colonial powers. Can you talk to me a little bit more about the significance of exhibiting Indigenous comics in the current landscape of the art world?
Yeah, for sure. I agree that comics and illustration and graphic art is very seldom considered to be fine art or high art, in quotes, because most people, when they think of a comic book, they think of Superman, they think of Spider-Man, they think of like action heroes that traditionally have been marketed towards young boys and has sort of been brushed off as like cheap entertainment. But in reality, comics have such a long and fascinating history of serving not just children and not just boys, but people of all backgrounds, all ages, all genders, and a history of carrying content of all different types too, not just, not even just fiction. Comics and zines as well have been used to distribute information during times of political oppression, to educate people who don't have access to higher levels of education, talking about things like safe sex, talking about things like feminism or civil rights. So historically, they are a very powerful form of both art and literature. And I mean, today the field of graphic novels has become a lot more popular now because people are starting to see that it is a valid form of both art and literature, because the genre can be anything and anyone can be creating or reading comics. They can be so refined just as much as they can be silly and fun. The content can be just as serious as it can be funny and lighthearted. So it's such a broad medium and a broad industry, and that's part of why I like it so much. And I think what I want is for more people to realize that, because I mean, comics kind of changed my life in a way, and I was one of those people who grew up thinking comics were just superheroes and they were just meant for boys, like I shouldn't be reading them, they're not for me. But once I kind of had my eyes opened to what comics can be and what they can do for us, I mean, here I am, a professional comic artist, and like it's how I'm making my living and it's how I express myself. It's how I connect with other people. So I want more people to have that realization so that more stories can be shared, more stories can be read, and this art form can get the appreciation that it deserves.
Yeah, I definitely hear you there, and I think I have myself personally, I have like a similar experience in that for a long time, like the traditional North American comic didn't really appeal to me until like I started to be able to access like these other forms of comics that were like much more expansive. And you're right, like one of the really interesting things about comics is that they are such powerful forms of communication. I think there's a video actually at the gallery in which Gord Hill talks about why he got into comics in the first place. And Gord Hill, for the listener who might not be familiar, he's a he's one of the artists featured, and wrote a number of graphic novels about, I guess, what you could call like somewhat heavy topics, right? They're about resistance against colonialism, capitalism. They are about political struggle, and he wanted to make those stories because he realized like not a lot of people want to like sit down and read like a 500 page history book. But if you can take all the main points and put that into a format that is engaging in both words and also in visuals, you might be able to get folks to think a little bit differently about important things in the world, such as history and the things that impact us. And I almost wonder, when you mention like how comics and zines, for example, have informed people, and that's why they're so valuable. Part of me actually also wonders like if maybe one of the reasons why comics might not be seen as super valuable by the larger art world is because of who, I guess, those publications are informing, right? Like the discussions that they're having, topics about, you know, as you say, like safe sex, feminism, environmentalism, and that type of thing. Yeah, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally possible that that is like a subconscious influence on people in the fine arts world who maybe look down on zines and comics, especially because zines especially, they're meant to be produced at a low cost and given away at a low cost or given away for free, because their primary function historically is to be accessible to people of lower income and of lower education levels. And so that often includes people of color. It includes poor people, disabled people, sex workers. And so those people are often also excluded from the fine high art world, which is, as we know, full of elitism, full of colonialism, full of white supremacy, even when those things are subconscious on the parts of curators or museum directors. They are very present, and those of us from marginalized backgrounds do very much notice them. So yeah, it just felt really special to have something in the Bill Reed Gallery, which is a very well-respected gallery in Vancouver, and to showcase these things that, yeah, maybe not always, but sometimes produced at a lower budget and not aimed at wealthy white tourists, but are put on the same level as like any famous painting or sculpture you might see. And yes, they're just drawn on a piece of paper with pen, but the artists who drew them have so many years of practice and skill and insight that they put into their work. And I just wanted to showcase the value of that.
Thank you. Move on to the next question. So comics, and I guess it kind of like echoes a little bit about what we were talking earlier about like traditional comics. Well, the work that's featured in the exhibition, the way that the comics take form are displayed in various ways. And I, the explainer at, I think it's, I don't know what it's called, but like the description of the exhibition.
The curatorial statement.
Thank you. Yes. The curatorial statement notes that the featured artwork comes in traditional and digital styles. And I think that the visitor might actually be surprised to see that even within those styles, the way that the stories are being told may not necessarily be one how conventionally thinks of comics. Echoing, like, in the sense of what you mentioned before, like, those superhero comics. But rather, you know, there are zines in there. I think there's one by Gord Hill that you can literally take home. Your zines are in there as well. There is I guess, like, in my mind, I would call kind of like a painting, but really is a comic by Michael. And then there's, of course, the blanket created by Wes. Can you talk a little bit about the subversion of the traditional comic as seen in the exhibition?
Yeah, totally. So one thing I liked about this collection of artists is that they all have really different ways of working, not only in the types of stories they tell and their genre, but how they approach comics as a medium. So like you said,